Welcome everyone to another edition of the Dress of a Watch podcast.
Is that better, maybe?
Yeah, it's better. Perfect.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. Very good. Good to see you, man. How are you?
Very good, very good. Thanks for agreeing to do this. It's awesome.
Absolutely. I gotta see. The comments are already fired up.
Yeah.
It's funny. My buddy OT and I did a live at the very beginning of all of this. It was about a week before it started. And, like, we were both kind of comparing the mustache actions. So like now I'm almost 40 days into this. I'm like, well, now I can't quit. So we're full on.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, I tried to grow my beard, but then I had to cut it off a little bit because it was getting a bit too stressful.
And it gets out of hand. Yeah, it gets totally out of hand. Yeah, exactly. I rode past my barber yesterday, and it looks like they're still open and doing like private consultations and stuff. So I might be able to get a haircut, but now I'm fully committed to keeping the mustache on until this is all over. So. But anyway, I really thanks for having me though, man. You're in Austria, right? You're based in Austria?
Yeah, I'm based in Austria.
Cool. Very cool. So I noticed you've got one of my favorite little independents can you pronounce it for everyone? The Suchi and Son or Zone? Suchi and Zone?
Karl Suchi and Söhne.
Zuki. Yeah. Okay. Zuki, very cool.
Yeah, I got one to test a couple of days ago and I was reviewing it. So I will unfortunately have to give it back.
Oh, bummer. So that's absolutely one of my favorite. So for the people that are following me that maybe don't know Nicholas, so I see some of my followers in here as well. So I want to introduce you. I know we're kind of doing this interview both ways.
Yeah, no problem.
So Nicholas actually works with Hirsch, right?
Yeah.
You're with
sales and marketing.
Oh, wonderful. Okay. So you guys, everybody follow Nicholas because he said, do you do the photography and stuff for Hirsch as well?
A part of it, but luckily I have a professional photographer as well.
Okay. That's very cool. So yeah. I'm gonna plug you guys real quick because I know you probably won't. I'm wearing a watch with a Hirsch strap on it. I get asked all the time, like people want to know like what the best watch straps are for stuff, and there's so many options. I mean, we're lucky to have so many incredible options. But I constantly recommend Hirsch stuff, and I feel like if I've recommended one of the performance straps from Hirsch to anybody watching this right now recently, these are bar none my favorite straps. They're waterproof. I've dove and swam, and I ride with them on constantly. And I find that like, if I have a good strap on my watch, I'm much less inclined to change it. So I've got two of your camo ones on the way that I'm excited to see. You guys.
Yeah.
I was waiting for the camo stuff.
I have them here as well.
Oh, right. Oh, let's check it out.
This is the green one.
Oh, cool. The John. Who is it named after? They're called John. I mean, like, you guys have a strap called Arnie, I think, which is got to be Arnold Schwarzenegger. Who is John in this case?
So last year we did a giveaway for one of these, but they had they looked a bit different. They had a red core.
Okay.
And then we asked the participants to suggest a name. And a lot of them were suggesting John Rambo and these kinds of things. And then we said, okay, it's a camouflage, so it would fit perfectly to John. So we picked John. Yeah.
Okay, Rambo, that's perfect. Okay, I can get behind that. That's very cool. So anyway, what I was going to say is, so Suchi und Söhne, Austrian independent. So if you're watching this and you're not familiar, it's easily one of my favorite kind of indies to come along in the last couple of years. The way that the line work on it is really incredible. Really one of the coolest three-hand indies that's come out of the watch world in the last four or 5 years, I think. Has a beautiful movement and everything. So I'm looking forward to seeing the photos that you've got of it, but I've been enjoying what you've been posting so far. So
thank you very much.
Thank you
very
absolutely.
Much. Yeah, so... I'm very happy to have you here to have a talk with you, and maybe we can start off by you introducing yourself and telling us a little bit about yourself.
Absolutely. I live here in the San Francisco Bay Area, in Marin County. So I've been living out here for about 10 years. I'm from the Midwest originally. Been in the watch industry for I've been into watches for the better part of the last decade, but I've been working actively in the watch industry probably for the last 5 years. And then 2 years ago, I started my own content marketing firm as well, so I can service the wider variety of clients within the watch industry, specifically with some of the things that I'm either most passionate or most experienced in. So I do a lot of content, social media. I've been getting more into photography in the last couple of years as well, so that's been really fun to spend time around that. I've known Ariel Adams at a Blog to Watch for 4 or 5 years as well. I did some scuba diving stuff with him and with Oris down in Grand Cayman a number of years ago, and we've kind of been friends ever since. And so I've early on was a contributor at a Blog to Watch, and now I'm the content marketing director there. So I manage a lot of the marketing initiatives, some of the branded content side of things I work with as well. Then I manage their social media. So we're actually, to plug a Blog to Watch this week, we're actually interviewing George Kern with Breitling on Wednesday morning, actually right around the same time. So if you're around, I know George just launched a whole bunch of really cool stuff for Breitling fans last
Yeah.
week. He's excited to share those with us. So
Yeah.
definitely
Very
check that out
cool.
on Wednesday.
Yeah,
So.
it's definitely gonna be a cool one because I last week when I saw the new releases, I really liked the rainbow Super Ocean.
I was telling a friend of mine that's kind of the first time that we, maybe not the first time, but it's really rare for us to get that really colorful aesthetic and a watch that you can actually like swim with, or you know,
Yeah.
because usually you've
True,
got,
yeah.
you know, $150,000 or $200,000 in precious gemstones on with all that color. So yeah, it'll be cool. It'll be cool to see. So I'm looking forward to that. I've also very long been a fan of the kind of the vintage chronomats as well. That
Yeah.
was really kind of the era, that like early 90s, that early 90s era of the chronomat is really kind of where I started to pay a little bit more attention to watches with Breitling and Omega and some of the other brands that were kind of around that space at the time. So that particular aesthetic feels kind of nostalgic for me, so I was really excited to see them. I mean, I know the chronomat goes well, you know, well beyond that, but so anyway, I'm excited to see those in person. It was a bummer that we weren't able to go hands-on with them. You know, everything was
Yeah.
everything's canceled forever.
Yeah.
But Wednesday, you know, we'll be able to see them on
Yeah.
George's wrist, and that'll be enough to start with.
Yeah. That's
So
definitely cool. Yeah. I was supposed to be on the roadshow here in Vienna as well,
okay,
to
yeah.
actually test them and to see them.
Oh
But
no.
unfortunately, that fell. That
Everything.
didn't work out. So,
Knowing George though, my guess is that they'll have something planned
yeah.
for the summer or for the fall. And I know in Europe they've done the waves and the motorcycle thing
Okay.
in the fall, and they did some surf stuff here in California last fall as well. So I know we'll probably get another chance.
Cool, yeah. Yeah.
So
I actually really liked the Chronomat as well, even though the Rainbow Super Ocean was definitely my favorite. But I actually didn't expect the Chronomat. The cool thing about it was actually the bracelet. I'm not the type of guy that says that a lot because I don't really like metal bracelets, but it really looked cool
You
with
can't
these
not.
tubes. Yeah.
Yeah, you can't not. What's up, Taylor? I'm gonna pop through some comments here. What's up,
Yeah,
Taylor?
go ahead, Zach.
OT's gotta go. Thanks for joining. The mustache content. We've got to keep it going. Who makes your hat? That hat's amazing. I've been jumping on your lives all week, and I was like, man, I need to ask him who makes that hat.
So I have a friend here in Vienna who started
Okay.
his own business around hats,
Okay.
and
Oh,
it's
cool.
called Nomad Modern, and he creates those hats by hand with his wife.
Oh,
So I've
amazing.
gotten a couple.
Oh, that's amazing.
Quite
I
cool.
after Basel World last year, I jumped into Vienna. I've only been to Vienna once actually, but I stopped in last year, very briefly, to meet up with some friends and link up with my wife. And we had dinner at this place called, I think it was called I Love Schnitzel. I'm pretty sure it was called I Love Schnitzel.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. It was like so amazing. It's one of the best meals I've ever had. Wandered around the downtown area. Vienna is an amazing city. You're super lucky to be there.
It's very nice. I'm very happy to be here. I'm very happy to be
awesome.
Here.
Well, go ahead.
No, so what I was wondering, how did you actually get into watches? So I've talked to a couple of people right now, and most of their stories go back to their childhood and watches with their parents or their grandparents. So what's your story behind the watches?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I, you know, my dad, you know, in hindsight, this is actually one of my favorite things about watches. And I personally feel like I don't have maybe the best or the most interesting story, but one of my favorite things about this particular world, and when people ask me why watches, or people are express surprise as to like, oh wow, people still wear watches, like actually they do. There's this whole cottage industry around them. The thing that's interesting about them is you can always learn something about somebody by asking them what's on their wrist. And so their wrist will either implicitly tell you something about the personality or their family history or something, or they will explicitly share a story with you about, oh, I got this from my wife, or my grandfather, you know, did this thing and gave this to me eventually. I don't really have any of those stories, although in hindsight, my father was in the military. He was a UDT, so he was a frogman essentially. And so he always had a cool dive watch, but I didn't realize that he always had a cool dive watch until I became much older and started paying a little bit more attention to watches. And there just kind of came a time when a really good friend of mine at the time had worked at a jewelry store, and she was just like, you need to have a good watch. And I was like, I was trying to kind of impress her that like I could know as much as she did. And so I just kind of dove down the forums, and I got totally lost. So I never really emerged. But in hindsight, you know, I remember going, you know, I remember being taught how to scuba dive in the lake where we grew up by my father. And like, he had a cool dive watch on at the time. It was a Tag Heuer. It was one of the Tag Heuer professionals, so one of the older, which I also now know is kind of my birth year watch. The professional kind of got its start as the quartz, you know, with the Mercedes hand and everything in the early 80s. And so those really kind of rose to prominence as I was growing up. So there was this whole world that was kind of happening on my dad's dresser that I wasn't really paying much attention to until almost college. And and so now in hindsight, you know, when I went back for my dad's 70th birthday, I think it was, we got him a Doxa sub, which was kind of cool. His dream watch back then. And then I found out after we gave it to him that like he used to have a Doxa sub, and it was this brand that was super important to him, but like he and I never really shared watches back then. And then all of a sudden he has all these amazing stories, and he knew all the guys that had the watches and everything. So it was interesting. So for me, it felt a little bit more retroactive. I didn't grow up around them in the same ways. I just became more acutely aware of them. And the other thing that I really love about the watch industry in particular, and this will always kind of be evident in the people that we meet at the shows and on Instagram and stuff, is the shared passion between people is really uniquely personal, in the sense that people volunteer amazing stories, and everybody's connected through something that's a little bit more than just a product, I think. And I've worked in the fashion and the outdoor lifestyle spaces. Those spaces are also, they can have deeply personal elements to them, but because sometimes those products are more tied to specific need or necessity, that the watch space, because there's less of a necessity for it, there's more of an emotional bond between people around these things. So I've always loved that about them.
Yeah,
happy to be
true.
Here.
It's true.
Yeah. Yeah. How about
Definitely
you?
Definitely true. Yeah. Well, actually, growing up in a business that's very, very tied to the watch industry has taken its toll on me. So, so I usually always went to work at the company during summer, earning a little bit of pocket money. And I remember one of the most memorable memories or times for me was when I used to package the Panerai bracelets that we did in the past.
Amazing.
And there were a lot of caoutchouc bracelets, and we, my brother and me, we packaged them the whole day, and I think we made 1,000 pieces a day or
that's
something like
super
that.
Super cool.
So that's basically one of these.
That's super cool. I'm glad I've been able to put that together, because as I started buying a lot of Hirsch straps, that I noticed that, and also after I became a Panerai owner, and started collecting some of the various Panerai straps, as one does, you notice that, like, the really good Panerai straps, a lot of them say, like, made in Austria. And I'm like, I wonder if those are actually, and lo and behold, I mean, this is what's amazing about the Hirsch brand, is that when you get the Hirsch branded straps, you're getting the same OEM quality of, what, you guys make straps for like 70% of incredible rubber, leather. So, I mean, there's a ton of really great options. And I do have Panerai rubber as well. Austrian leather. So yeah, it's very, very cool to see. So you've been at it for a long time then, huh?
Yeah. Very true.
Very cool. Very cool. Is it still, the company is still fully in the family?
Yeah, it's fully in the family. So my great grandfather, he founded the company. My grandfather took over, and then my father took over, and now my brother and me are running the business. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Right on. That's very cool. Do you have more plans for direct e-commerce, or am I just maybe not fully understanding how the process works?
No, we're actually right now in the process of, so we have our e-commerce page. So we have our online store.
Okay.
That's currently running for the EU only, because
got it. Yep.
Different restrictions and regulations and everything, and since we are offering also alligator bracelets and everything, you have to take care of the paper and the documents and everything, so it's a bit tricky with that to expand in the whole world. Yep. But
those alligator straps are very problematic for California.
Yeah, exactly. So so that is why we started off with the EU, and then we're going to see what we can do. We have fantastic partners all over the world that work with us, so that's definitely a thing. And same in the US now, we have two partners that we're going to work with very closely. Cool.
Are these people I know? Is that information that you can share yet?
Not really right now, because not yet fixed, so unfortunately I cannot share.
Okay, that's all right. Well, that's exciting to hear. I usually buy your stuff from one of your suppliers in the UK. They do a lot of international shipping. They're generally pretty quick and friendly about that kind of thing. So yeah, very cool.
That's true. Yeah. So what watch are you wearing today, actually?
Oh boy. So I'm working on a story about. So, there's the week on the wrist impressions, and sometimes, a general watch review requires somebody to wear something for several weeks or a month at a time or whatever that looks like. And I'm not sure that a full-on review is the type of thing that really is helpful to the community in terms of, like, what a review actually entails. But I'm working on a story about wearing only one watch throughout the entire shelter-at-home process. Okay. And on the very first day, on March 16th, when California got its shelter-in-place order enacted, the mandate started that we were the first major city or region in the United States to get it. I know Europe was well ahead of us at the time. I'm wearing my JLC Geophysic True Second, and I've been doing some other lives and a podcast a couple weeks ago, and the answer is always the same. Like, well, we're still in quarantine, so I'm still wearing the same watch. But it's actually been really interesting to see, usually I rotate every 3 or 4 days, or, if I'm traveling or something, I'll change I'll put something on that kind of makes sense for wherever I'm going, whether it's a GMT or it's a dive watch or something like that. And because I'm kind of staying at home, I need a date and something accurate. And I love the simplicity of this particular piece, and kind of reminds me of just to chill. And I love the movement as well. This is one of my favorite movements. With the deadbeat second. So anyway, so I'm working on kind of a story about what, you know, the amount of excess that we have kind of in the watch space, where people are changing watches every day or every week or whatever. And it's, you know, in this instance, and during this particular time of our lives, less is absolutely more. And I love that. And that to me is what this watch is all about. So what about you?
I'm actually wearing a Speedmaster today.
So, oh, rad!
Of nice. Course, it's Speedy Tuesday, so I thought.
It totally is. Yeah, very good. This is is that the Sapphire Sandwich, or is that that's a classic Mooney?
That's the classic Moonwatch, I think.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Oh, rad! Oh, is that the reduced?
Yeah, it's a reduced. Yeah.
Nice. Oh, very cool.
So very I have very small wrists. So okay. Reduced is perfect.
Yeah. And, what's your strap choice today?
I have the performance bracelet.
Oh, very
it's
cool.
Called Andy.
Yes.
It's the one with the embossed alligator skin.
Yes. Hey, I have a request for you. Is that you guys need so Omega has so many odd numbered, they have so many odd lug widths. Yeah. You guys, and I have a couple 19 or not 19, I have a couple 21 millimeter straps from you. But you need to do 21 and everything, 21 and 19
know,
and
yeah.
everything. Okay. You know this already. Yeah.
Yeah. I get this a lot. So I think every second day or somebody sends me a DM and says, we need this. And I think in every Q&A I do, I have one person asking for it. So right now, I can assure you we're working on it.
Oh, good.
No, so we're trying to get some out by mid of this year, end of this
that's
year. We
awesome.
Should have a couple in
that's
the sizes.
Great news. Yeah. That's great news. Yeah, no, I've tried. I mean, the 22 millimeters that you have, the rubber core, especially when there's a textile or something on top, it doesn't squeeze very well, which is great because the straps are relatively rigid, but.
Yeah.
We definitely need more odd numbered widths.
Yeah, especially now that we have these quick exchange push pins,
we need to make
the odd sizes, because it doesn't make any sense to make them smaller or squeeze them in, because they wouldn't fit.
I hate those
really?
Quick release bars. Yeah, I hate them. I want to use the Because some OEM manufacturers have different, like the physical tip of the spring bar is longer or shorter, or the diameter is different.
Yeah.
And I always just want to make sure that I'm using the OEM bars. So I have a whole bunch of Panerai bars and a whole bunch of Omega bars and et cetera. So I recently learned how to remove the quick release spring bar by unscrewing the. So this is a little pro tip. If you hate those things, you can
cut it off
the little
ball.
Oh, you can cut it off too. That's true.
Yeah.
So, very cool. Well, that's exciting to hear.
Yeah. So we're working on it. We're working on it.
were there more? Did Hirsch have straps that you were planning on showing? Does the brand have a booth or a presence at Baselworld? Or
no.
Was there a plan
no. We
to have,
we used to.
Okay.
We used to have one many years ago. I think 2017 was the last time we were at Basel with a booth.
Right.
But then we pulled out because it didn't make any sense anymore to be there for us. And we now focus very strongly on being more consumer centric. So that's the type of thing we're trying to do right now.
You guys so quit Basel before it was cool.
Yeah. No, that's also why the reason behind using these quick release push pins, because we feel that especially in times like these where you still want to have a different look on your wrist, and if you only have one watch or two watches, then it's easier for you to change them. And a lot of people don't know that they can actually change their bracelets. So
yeah.
So that's That's my main mission, actually.
Very cool. Educate. That's a good mission. That's a good mission.
Yeah.
And it's exciting. Yeah. I mean, with those particular bars, it's exciting to, I know when I've recommended straps that other, you know, for various watches from people who are interested in kind of changing up the look. Yeah, there's a great comment there about it being much more consumer friendly. That's exactly right. And when you tell somebody, oh, you can actually change it really easily. Like you just need a little fingernail and, you know, a nice smooth surface to kind of rest your watch on. You can change it in 15 seconds or whatever.
Exactly.
People are always really happy to see that. So.
Yeah. And also like Vintage Watchzilla is saying, most of the people don't want to use a tool on their watch, especially if it's a premium watch. So
yeah, I sold a watch a couple of years ago, and in the listing I had, I'm generally pretty, this is to the point about being afraid to use tools on your watches. You know, I use one of the pretty standard Bergeron spring bar tools. I've had kind of at my disposal for a long time. And I sold this particular watch with a new, it was actually a Hirsch strap. It was a replacement, like a honey colored leather strap that I kind of included with the kit that I'd never put on. And the guy who had just bought the watch from me was like, yo, can you put the new strap on before you ship it? And I was like, yeah, sure. So I changed the strap. I was in a hurry because I was trying to ship it and pack everything up real nice. And I scratched the shit out of the back of the case. Like the spring bar just or the tool just like shot out of my hand. So I freaked out. I took a couple photos of the new thing. And I said, the condition of the watch changed since we last talked. And we worked out a new deal. And I sent him some cake. He was super chill about it, but it was, I added some gray hair after that happened. So I get it. I mean, it's risky to have to play around with the tool and stuff. But like I said, I would just rather have the OEM bars and be done with it. So,
so you mentioned diving and everything. So you're more interested in divers' watches, right? If I get that correct.
Yeah, generally speaking, most of what I've got in the box, not so much diving, but just like general purpose utility, and dive watches tend to kind of adhere to that. So, I mean, one of my favorite watches that I've ever owned that I unfortunately don't own anymore because it was too big was the Omega Seamaster Aquaterra GMT. So they did a Good Planet GMT that had this kind of white lacquer polar style dial GMT. Oh, yeah. It was water resistant to 150 meters. The Aquaterra is an amazing watch. And while I had it, I did dive with it. And, you know, it's this great traveling, like all-purpose sports watch. It didn't have a timing bezel, but you know, when you're already diving with a computer, it's just nice to have the time so you can kind of keep track of things sort of loosely. But yeah, I've been a Seamaster man for a very long time. And so the older I get, I've been kind of paring back the collection, but I've been leaning more towards interesting modern Seamasters. Like a lot of the watches that really caught my eye when I first dove down the rabbit hole a whole bunch of years ago, and then only now have been able to kind of reorganize the collection in a more sort of meaningful way. So that's been really fun. So yeah, I've got the Planet Ocean has kind of long been my favorite. Like that's like the prototypical dive watch, especially the 2500 era caliber, because they're a little bit thinner and the sizes are super nice. Seamaster 300 is king. So I've got a ceramic Seamaster 300 that I haven't dove with yet. I actually bought it pretty early on this year. It was the last thing I bought before all this stuff kind of went crazy. And but there was a plan to, I had a dive trip in Monterey, which is just down the coast, a big photo shoot dive programming thing that we kind of put together. So I got that watch. I was going to get some proper water time with it, and then I put it on a leather strap, and it's been in the box ever since. So, cool. But yeah, mostly dive watches, but dive and kind of general purpose sport. So, the reissue 57. I know. I can't. I don't know if Vintage Watchzilla was on with us when we started, but I'm chatting with George Kern on Wednesday morning, so tomorrow morning, California time, same time as this. So I'm looking forward to seeing the new 57. So it's interesting because they put an ETA-based movement in it instead of the in-house movement because they wanted it to be thinner and smaller, which I thought was a really neat touch.
Yeah, I think the case is 38 millimeters or something, and then you have the 42 millimeter bezel, right?
Exactly. Yep, exactly. But they were also super worried about the thickness, so probably means the Seamaster 300 issue. I know. I handled it. It's funny. The reissue, the 50th anniversary, the 60th anniversary collection, I had it pre-ordered. As soon as I saw it at Basel, I pre-ordered it immediately. And then for some reason in the months that it took for it to, because Omega's kind of slow, in the months that it took, I ended up getting a Seamaster 300 instead. And I put my deposit back for something else because I wanted the slightly larger size. I'm kind of an outlier in a sense that I like small watches, but I prefer to wear larger ones for whatever reason. So I actually prefer the more modern proportions of the Seamaster 300. And I think that the 300, the Master Coax 300 is kind of like Omega's Pelagos in a sense that it's like this kind of old school this old school aesthetic, but super modern architecture. And I love that. Whereas the 60th anniversary was too close to the original. Like way too close. It was scary how close it was. And I mean, that's amazing that they were able to do that, but I just like the modern, modern stuff.
So what do you think about the James Bond edition?
I think it's awesome. I think that's also a great example of, again, modern architecture and kind of an old school aesthetic. And, based here in the Bay Area, I work a lot with Rob Kaplan at Topper Jewelers, an amazing family-owned retailer that carries Omega and Grand Seiko and a bunch of stuff. And Rob called me last week and he was like, I've got a few Bond Seamasters and I haven't had a chance to go hands-on with it yet or see one or photograph one. And he got a couple in last week. And I think they were destined for clients at the time. But he was like, if you can come down here, I'll like pass it through the window and you can photograph it. You know, we were trying to set up this whole elaborate scheme cool. So I could just shoot the Bond watch. So I haven't actually seen it yet, but I do really love it. And I love mesh bracelets. So
yeah, it has a really cool aesthetic.
It's super cool. Yeah. Does Hirsch do metal bracelets?
No, we don't do any metal
bracelets. Textile.
So everything what is soft basically, but to be honest we've tried a couple of things with metal as well, like incorporating different kinds of metal pieces into softer materials. So this is something that we have tried, but nothing that is safe to produce serial production and to offer to customers.
Right, that's fair. Okay,
just prototypes.
No, that's cool. Yeah, keep me posted if that ever changes. Though I feel that's pretty exciting. Are there more? Is there more product development kind of in the works, or was the camo was kind of your big release this spring?
Yeah, we're doing a lot in terms of the performance line this year because it's just an amazing technology where you can really incorporate different kinds of styles it has a huge quality advantage in terms of water resistance and also wearing comfort and everything. So
yeah, they're amazing.
This is the main release this year. There are some other releases that we're going to put out this year, but all focused around the performance. And then we have a lot coming in terms of research and development. We're trying to dive deep into newer materials. Essentially more sustainable materials, because in the past couple of years, we've created a couple of cool bracelets with sustainable materials. So we have a stone bracelet that has the genuine slate on top.
Yeah, I've seen that. That's very cool.
And then last year we did a limited edition where we had wood surface on it, so made out of genuine wood,
like cork or something. Like cork, like a cork wood or
no,
something?
it's actually real. So it's birch, the
Oh, very
tree.
cool. Oh, very
Yeah.
cool. Okay. Oh, wow, that's
So
awesome.
this, yeah, and so now we're thinking about what else can we use. So if there's something that like plants and everything that we could use to make bracelets out of.
Very
So
cool.
this is something we're working on right now.
Vintage
Yeah.
Watchzilla says that if I like mesh in a big watch, I need a flow prof. And I have a
Yeah.
flow prof, and I love titanium, so I have the titanium flow prof because I love mesh and big watches and divers. So that's another watch that I haven't worn much this year at all because I haven't been out. But that's a great kind of adventure, travel, dive piece. So I feel like if you like the Seamaster, you can't not have a 2500 Planet Ocean. You can't not have a Seamaster flow prof. I have a Skyfall Aquaterra as well. So those kind of
Very
between
cool.
those
Very
three,
cool,
that's
yeah.
kind of the trilogy for me. So looking forward
Yeah,
to
it's
seeing
very
what
cool.
Omega has this year. They've
Yeah.
I mean they've kind of kept a tight lid on things, but TBD. I gotta
We'll
ask you
see.
too.
Please.
You gotta make the Robbie in like an all black version. So with like the perforated, I need a murdered out Robbie. So tonal black stitching, black core. Let me know when that happens.
Will do, will do, will do. Yeah,
Okay.
I think there's a
21
lot of
millimeters.
21. Yeah, I think there has been a lot of people asking for all black versions.
Oh,
We
interesting.
have a couple, but most of the times it's so that's the funny part about the bracelets, because we have every size and every length, but just not in every style. So
Yeah,
this is a bit
exactly.
difficult to
Yep, exactly.
cater to everyone. So
Yeah,
this is
exactly.
something we're
That's
working
okay.
on now.
That's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay. We
But
appreciate the
yeah,
effort.
definitely we can. We're thinking about making an all black version of our best-selling products right now. So
Oh, very
to
cool.
have
Okay.
something there, that would be cool, yeah.
Very cool. Well, I'm looking forward to getting the camo. If the camo had arrived on time, everything is just all the shipping is super slow right now. But
Yeah.
I have two
Yeah.
of those on the way. Had it arrived on time, I would have been wearing that on the
Yeah.
JLC. But maybe now. I think it's due to arrive next week, so we'll see.
Oh, okay. So everything worked out with.
Yeah, we're sorted. Yeah, we're sorted.
Okay,
Yep.
perfect. Perfect. Perfect.
Yeah.
Very good. Very good. So I have another question for you because I
Sure.
know that you're working with a block to watch
Yeah.
So out of all the bigger watch focused blogs, I would say in the US, I think you cannot name a block to watch. So it's a great platform.
Yeah,
And
thank you.
how
Thank
did
you.
that come about actually for you?
Yeah, well, I kind of spoiled it earlier, but I got involved with a dive trip with Oris as a so I was doing some stuff on the forums actually just as a fan and a reader. Got involved with Oris and then ended up in Grand Cayman and Ariel was there as well. So they were kind of doing something. They were doing a program with Oris with some watch fans and stuff, and I was able to go. It was really really a cool opportunity. And so having met Ariel, I was already actually working in the editorial, the lifestyle media space, and kind of volunteered some free time with Ariel as I was starting to experiment with photography and stuff at the time, and promised him that I could do some hands-on and cool kind of adventure stories with a few different watches. And a few months later, I went to Hawaii for a different dive kind of adventure trip, and I did an adventure story about a Seiko tuna for a blog to watch, and that was kind of my first watch media story that I did after. So I did an adventure piece on the Grand Cayman experience that also published on a blog to watch, and then after that I did like a more watch centric thing on the Seiko, and kind of went from there, and we've stayed close ever since. And then 2 years ago, so in 2018, I joined the blog to watch team a little, not full time, but more to help them out with Baselworld and some other stuff. So I went to Europe for Basel for my first show in 2018, covered everything, shot photos, and kind of managed the team's social media and everything from there. and that kind of took off from there after that.
Cool.
And then it went back in 2019. So I've only done Basel twice, and both times everybody was like, yeah, it was bigger last year. This year, not so much. But was really lucky to be able to see SIHH as well, and some of the other smaller shows kind of in between. I also covered JCK, which is a show that happens in Vegas. And I think JCK was canceled a couple weeks ago. But okay. that's like a late May, June trade show here in Las Vegas. That's a quick flight for me. So, but yeah, I'm looking forward to, I mean, my beat on A Blog to Watch, traditionally speaking, has been more around, kind of adventure and lifestyle editorial, not so much. Ariel can crank out reviews because he, you know, reviews and hands-on type stories because he really has a good sense of the history of, you know, he can look at a watch and be like, oh yeah, they did this back in 87. And you know, like, he's got this kind of encyclopedic memory of, you know, the watch industry and its general trajectory. And he's also been doing it for a really long time. So he's got a fair amount of historical context. So I can't compete with that. No one else on the Blog to Watch team can, but, you know, we're a relatively small team, but we've been decentralized and fully mobile since the beginning. So, it's been interesting throughout the whole quarantine period because, I wouldn't say it's been business as usual, but we didn't have, there was no adaptation required for the team whatsoever. I mean, team calls are still on, brands still have news that needs written about the channel. You know, we've kind of tweak the messaging and various things to kind of fit with the needs of the audience as the times kind of change. But for the most part, we've been extremely busy since the beginning of the year, and I doubt that's going to change. So it's been a hell of a ride.
Very cool. So now the only thing you need to get your hands on is the watches. So the brands need to send you some watches.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I've got a really big box coming from Seiko today, I think. So I'm keeping an eye out for that. I've got a
cool.
I know it's Speedy Tuesday. I've got a Fortis on my desk right now, the official Cosmonauts chronograph, which is one of my all-time favorite tool watches. I'm working on a piece about that. I've got a couple other ones. I've got a pretty cool Le Forban diver as well, which is a French it's a Paris manufactured. I think the cases are probably from Asia. The cases, the movements are Miyota, but the assembly and everything is done in Paris. It's a beautiful looking kind of heritage diver. So I've got a few pieces here, but for the most part, all the big releases that we would have been able to get hands on for are, everything is kind of TBD. So
yeah,
it'll be interesting to see. There's a lot of embargoes. This is actually going to be a very busy week for watches. There's a lot of embargoes that are slated for the 24th and 25th, which is Friday and Saturday of this week. So
yeah,
if you're a watch fan, stay close to Instagram and A Blog to Watch because there's a lot coming. I mean, literally, yeah, as we've been having this conversation, I'm watching my inbox and I've got stuff, the new stuff from Panerai. I'm looking at the new stuff from Panerai and JLC right now. So
cool.
There's a lot of cool shit coming. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm very excited to see what they're going to do and how these live streams or the digital publication of the watches is going to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's actually pretty cool that they pulled it off that fast. Like, not expect that.
You know, I didn't expect it either. And the kind of running joke is that everything in the Swiss watch industry, everything in Switzerland happens 20 years too late. And, you know, at the speed at which everything is moving right now, I mean, you can't be 6 months late or else you miss the boat. Sure. So I agree. I've been, I wrote about that yesterday. So we're launching a new Instagram Live, some programming tomorrow on Wednesday. And I remarked about that in the story that we published yesterday on it, that, I mean, it is pretty incredible how quickly everybody pivoted. But what's interesting is, you know, I think the pivot has been happening for a long time. I mean, we look at Breitling, for example. There's a reason we chose Mr. Kern to be kind of our first guest on the show, because he was one of the first to pivot away from Basel World. He was one of the first big brands to pivot away from Basel World. A lot of people have been leaving the show for the better part of the last 5 to 10 years, but Breitling was the first brand to kind of put a flag in the sand and say, like, we've got a better strategy for this. Bremont did it as well the year before, a much smaller brand, of course, so their impact wasn't quite as felt throughout the show. I mean, when Breitling pulled out, when you walk into the show, you see Tag Heuer and you see Rolex, and then you see Tudor, and then at the end of the hall, you see Breitling and Omega. And with Breitling gone and with Omega gone, that whole, it was just a big hallway at that point. You could see all the way through the show. It was really, really eerie. So when Breitling left, that was the first moment where people were like, oh shit, like this is problematic. I'm really interested to kind of hear George's perspective on that. But to be fair, like, they've always had a strong digital strategy as soon as he came on, and it was definitely had nothing to do with the trade shows. So yeah, it should be an interesting week. Should be a very interesting week for sure. Yeah.
No, it's really cool what is happening right now, and I think the situation has a lot of benefits as well. Because due to these changes, the people are forced to do them actually. And what I also experience is the communication with my team has always been very very flexible actually. Because I mean, in terms of marketing and sales, you can be a bit more flexible due to the fact that I have people working all around the world.
Right.
But I see that, especially also from our point of view in production and everything, that the people are now working from home and the efficiency is going up. Even though we're working less hours, we're creating more. And that's a cool part about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's enlightening. And I honestly think that within the Swiss industry, there's a fair amount of people are afraid of what they don't understand. And that's projected really overtly, especially in the watch industry. And I think for the longest time, a lot of these brands simply, like, if we ignore Instagram, maybe it'll go away. Like, if we pretend this thing that we don't understand doesn't exist, maybe we won't have to develop a strategy for it or figure out what to do with it. And it's been great in the sense that a lot of these brands have fully leaned into it. We ran a story on a blog to watch last week about all the watch brands that are either giving back, they're working towards relief during the COVID crisis, or they are kind of adapting their digital strategy to give people stuff to do while they're at home. And I think all of those elements are experimental in the sense that these brands are finally learning or finally starting to spin the wheels a little bit and figure out how to best approach the situation. So I think it'll only continue to be interesting. And at the end of the day, all of this is really good for the watch community. The watch community it's ironic that the online watch community is what has supercharged the watch industry. And the watch industry in return, I feel like, hasn't fully embraced the online community. I think that's about to change. So that's exciting.
Very good. Yeah. So my last question for you today is we have to be a bit careful. I learned it the hard way. After 60 minutes, it's just cut.
That's right. So, I'll keep it short.
Yeah. My last question for you today is, do you think all we've seen from the digital releases from Breitling, the ones that we're going to see next week or the coming weekend, do you think that Rolex will revisit their strategy in terms of releasing products this year?
I don't. Well, so the thing is I don't think Rolex has, and somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think Rolex has issued a press release or a formal statement saying we are not releasing anything. Patek did a formal, they were like, yo, we're not doing anything, so y'all can get bent. I don't think Rolex has done that. I think what Rolex will do is they'll do it through Tudor. So if they do decide to change, they've always kind of used Tudor as this vehicle for testing the waters, either digitally or with influencers or with tech or with, they've always used Tudor as kind of an incubator of sorts. And I think that if they don't give us another Submariner with a whatever, like Rolex is the least exciting brand to me. I'm sorry for everybody that listens that likes Rolex. I have an immense respect for them. And the fact that they, where Rolex goes, the industry follows. And I have immense respect for how they, I mean, even with Baselworld, like that whole debacle needed an adult, and Rolex was
definitely
the adult.
Yeah.
They were like, this is kind of horseshit what's happening here, and we're going to put our foot down, and if you guys can't handle it, we're out of here. And that situation needed an adult, and Rolex was the adult. And so I love that they are kind of the stabilizer, I guess, in all of this. And we need that. We need that more than anything. It's not a brand that excites me. But that being said, Tudor is an exciting brand, and they use Tudor sort of to propel those types of things. So to answer your question, my guess, and this is completely unfounded on anything, but if anything comes from the Rolex family this year, I think it'll probably be from Tudor. So
very cool.
That's a safe bet. So yeah, I mean, those guys, Rolex does not need our money at this point. They don't need anyone's money.
No.
They could not release anything for multiple years, and the value of their current stuff would continue to go up. I mean, it's
definitely.
It's crazy. So
They
use it smartly. Yeah, my buddy Charlie is exactly correct. Charlie, you got to get that home plate. we're working on a home plate, either a big block or a home plate for my buddy Charlie. So
cool.
TBD.
All right, cool.
Well, Nicholas, this has been a lot of fun. I really appreciate you taking the time, and I appreciate the insight into the Hirsch strap business.
Thank you very much.
That I've got a whole bunch of great options from you guys, and I'm constantly looking forward to hearing what's next. And thank you.
Yeah, thank you for agreeing to do this. It's been very cool for me also to hearing your story, and this is also the reason why I'm doing this, hearing a lot of different kinds of stories behind this shared passion about watches. So
that's amazing. Well, thank you for making the space and the platform. And,
you're welcome.
Look thank forward to seeing you online soon.
Yeah, same.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Thanks, brother.
Zach,
take care.
Have a nice day. Bye bye.
All right, you too, brother.